Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, an analyst considers the effort to end chaos in Libya. The genie might be out of the bottle in Saudi Arabia, where women participated in elections. We'll hear about technology speeding along medical advances.
Called a brain-machine interface, and they would just kind of think to move their arm or the leg, and it would move as naturally as an arm or leg does.
And which country songs and artists could get Grammy Awards? It's right here on The Voice of America. UN-mediated efforts to bring an end to years of conflict and chaos in Libya received a boost with international support for an agreement expected to be signed Wednesday in Morocco on a national unity government. My colleague Victor Beatty is following this story and joins us now in the studio. Welcome, Victor.
Hello, Susan. Well, representatives of 17 nations and four world organizations gathered in Rome Sunday amid growing concern over the presence of as many as 3,000 Islamic State fighters in that North African country. Among the diplomats taking part was U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
We cannot allow the status quo in Libya to continue. It is dangerous for the viability of Libya. It is dangerous for Libyans. And now, because of the increased presence of Daesh purposefully migrating there, it is dangerous for everyone. We are determined to make the most of the fact that the majority of the House of Representatives and a majority of the GNC have come together ready to sign an agreement. And they refuse any longer to be blocked by one or two people or by the individual politics. They are determined to speak and move forward for Libya, and we are determined to support them in that effort.
Kerry said the Rome Communique agreed to calls on all parties to accept an immediate and comprehensive ceasefire and pledged international security and economic support to the proposed Government of National Accord. Regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco told me the regional threat posed by the growing IS presence in Libya appears to have given the international community a sense of urgency to end Libya's turmoil.
The rise of the Islamic State in Libya has certainly been a motivating factor in getting a number of major powers involved in this process. Within Libya itself, there seems to be a hurting stalemate where the rival factions are recognizing that neither of them can win a military victory and that some kind of compromise may be possible. And the hope is that between the desire by the factions themselves to try to resolve the situation and pressure from foreign governments, they may be able to get some kind of national unity government that can end the bulk of the fighting and unite the country against the threat of ISIS.
As you know, of course, Libya has been on a downward spiral as far as security is concerned. Is there a possibility of bridging the huge gap that exists between Tripoli and the Eastern administration?
It's certainly possible, especially given the alternatives, or even just the status quo, is pretty bad. The problem is that when you have over 300,000 men under arms in a country that is barely 6 million, and you don't have a unified government, it makes it very easy for factionalism, whether it be regional, tribal, ideological, or anything else, to scuttle any attempt at unity. And so even though this agreement on paper looks quite promising, as we've seen in other multi-sided civil wars, whether it be Lebanon or Liberia or anything else, this may be the first of a number of such failed attempts.
Well, Stephen, as you know, that North African country has no democratic tradition. Muammar Gaddafi ruling it with an iron fist for more than 40 years. Is it possible to build those institutions?
When they had their one free nationwide election, not long after Gaddafi's overthrow, a moderate pro-democracy party has got the majority. And so there clearly is a willingness or a desire among the Libyan people for some semblance of democracy and stability and rule of law. Certainly there is a desire for a democratic, stable system, and the chaos of recent years, I think, has only strengthened that desire.
At the same time, writing in the U.S. publication Politico, former Italian Foreign Minister Emma Bonino and the president and CEO of International Crisis Group, Jean-Marie Guaynaud, warned against rushing into a new Libyan deal. They argued the agreement is opposed by leaders of the rival parliaments, and they urge adopting modest changes from an alternative plan to make it more acceptable to those parties.
Thank you, Victor.
All right, Susan.
This story is also getting attention on social media. Topsy.com reports Libya has gotten 1,508 tweets in the past day. Libyan armchair Arab tweets, "I see some characters at the Rome conference and just laugh to myself. How can anyone think they have any pull in Libya?" Sputnik writes, "Participants of Rome conference say ready to work with Libya to fight Daesh." Mary Fitzgerald says, "At Libya conference in Rome, Italy's foreign minister says international community will tackle threat posed by ISIS in Libya in coming months." Pasquale Salzano says, "After yesterday's successful ministerial meeting in Rome, Libya is on the agenda of the EU Council foreign ministers meeting today in Brussels." A story at voanews.com reports a senior U.S. State Department official says it is clear that Libya needs to have one government that is capable of getting trained and equipped in order to be able to take on Daesh more effectively. The official added that world powers expected Libya to seek additional international help once the UN-backed agreement is in place, if both sides follow through with their commitment to sign the UN-backed agreement on December 16th, work would then begin on establishing a cabinet or other key positions that would be part of a unity government based in Tripoli. And a Department of State tweet reads, "Ministerial meeting in Rome affirms support for Libyan people in maintaining unity of Libya." You can read more at hashtag Libya. And if you can, find us at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Nearly 5 years ago, the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency's Venus Climate Orbiter, Akatsuki, was supposed to go into orbit around Venus. Instead, the space probe was orbiting the sun until December 7th, when agency engineers fired its attitude control thrusters for 20 minutes to put it into an elliptical orbit around Venus. The Akatsuki will fly within 400 kilometers of Venus at its closest orbital point, or periapsis, and 440,000 kilometers at its furthest point, or apoapsis. The spacecraft is equipped with 6 instruments that will allow mission scientists to study Venusian climate factors such as stratification of the atmosphere, atmospheric dynamics, and cloud physics. The Japanese Space Agency also reports that the spacecraft is in good health. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
As many as 20 women may have won municipal council seats in Saudi Arabia's first election to allow both female voters and candidates, the result of a decision to permit women to participate by the late King Abdullah in 2011. The election involved more than 900 women competing for more than 2,100 seats among more than 6,400 candidates. Despite many obstacles, Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal says it is amazing any of them won a seat. He says the development was the result of a struggle among 3 factions within the kingdom.
One of those is, of course, the royal family, the Al Saud group, and then you have the religious group, which is quite powerful. And then third one is what you may call as the reformers, or you want to call them the pragmatists, which include businessmen, which include professors, teachers, merchants, and so on and so forth. So it's a very diverse group, and is not as powerful as the other two, who are very well centralized groups. Therefore, the changes that take place in a place like Saudi Arabia and have taken place so far are very much a function of somebody spearheading the move in the Al Saud group itself, typically the king or the crown prince. So looking at from that point of view, it's an important development, and it may be difficult to put the genie back into the bottle. From now on, given the fact that the women folk in Saudi Arabia are in fact better educated than men folk. There are in fact are more female graduates from the universities in many of the areas and fields, including even in engineering, than the men. And therefore one would expect that once this process begins, as it has begun, the process will go on and will get better and more organized.
Zubair Iqbal says with the younger royals taking power, the growing number of educated women in Saudi Arabia, and pressure from the reformers, it will be harder for religious conservatives to maintain the status quo, and he expects the pace of women's rights to accelerate. The United States Sunday said it welcomed this historic milestone, adding the election represents an important step forward in Saudi Arabia toward a more inclusive electoral process.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views, presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Coming up on International Edition, science fiction like medical devices, and a look at the Grammy Award nominees. Modern technology is speeding medical advances into realms we may have never expected, like developing brain-controlled robotic limbs, prosthetics with a sense of touch, and restoring sight with visual implants. Cara Platone looks at research changing the way we live in her book, We Have the Technology, How Biohackers, Foodies, Physicians, and Scientists Are Transforming Human Perception One Sense at a Time. And she joins us on the line. Welcome, Cara.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time. This field is so large. Why don't we start off with the example of thought-controlled robotic limbs? What is this all about?
Okay, well, these are being developed to help people who either are paralyzed through stroke or aren't able to move because they have Lou Gehrig syndrome or are even missing a limb. They've had a limb amputated. So the idea is that the robotic limb would be controlled by the brain. It's called a brain-machine interface, and they would just kind of think to move their arm or the leg, and it would move as naturally as an arm or leg does. And that is a pretty amazing breakthrough. It is in human clinical trials now through a research program called BrainGate.
Well, as another example, could you please tell us about advances in wearable and implantable technologies?
Okay, sure. So most of the implantable technologies available today, like those brain-controlled robotic limbs, or any kind of brain-machine interface, for example, something that would allow a person to control a computer interface to actually drive a cursor with their thoughts, are for people with very special medical needs. And one of the earliest examples is the retinal implant. This is developed for people who have lost their vision, and it's an implant that actually sits inside their eye on the back of their retina, and it translates information from a camera that they wear in a pair of glasses to electrical impulses that stimulate the surviving nerve cells in the back of their eye, and that information is translated to the brain as sight.
And in this age of hackers and badniks, this all brings into question privacy and security concerns.
Yeah, well, not for the implants themselves, which are very carefully controlled. They're usually only administered to people who have very special needs and through university or very special research programs. But these privacy and surveillance concerns are coming up with wearable devices. These are things like smart glasses, smart watches, things you might elect to wear on your body that have a good deal of information or a good deal of power to transmit information about where you are and what you're doing. We saw this with the first generation of Google Glass. One of the things that people really talked a lot about when Google Glass came out was discomfort with the camera, the idea that the wearer could film other people around them without their permission. And certainly with other versions of smartwatches and smart glasses, people are saying, well, how much information is this thing gathering about me? We know that there are ones that can measure heartbeat. There are ones that can measure how well you're sleeping, how many steps you've taken, all of this information. Now that said, in some ways, this isn't much different than the cell phone. We already, most of us, carry around a device in our pocket that is capable of tracking our location and relaying a lot of information about where we are and what we're doing.
Well, the name of your book again.
We have the technology.
Okay, thank you so much. Good luck with your book.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Which country songs and artists could get Grammy Awards next year? International Edition's Sarah Williams and Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong are here to tell us.
The Grammy nominations are out, and country music is abuzz about the surprises and potential winners, especially in some of the categories like Best Country Album, Best Country Solo Performance, and Best Country Duo Group Performance. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to fill us in on the nominations, give us some predictions, and share the responses of some of the contenders themselves. So, Nikki, who are some of the surprise nominees for Best Country Album?
Okay, so the nominees are Sam Hunt, Montevallo, Little Big Town, Painkiller, Ashley Monroe, The Blade, Kacey Musgraves, Pageant Material, and Chris Stapleton, Traveler. Now, there's no real surprises, per se, in terms of who got nominated. The hardest part of this category is seeing who will win, because all of the albums were great and popular among the critics. And even though Chris Stapleton is hot right now, we'll see how he fares up against Ashley Monroe and Kacey Musgraves, who will definitely give him a run for his money among Grammy voters. And I thought it was funny that Chris Stapleton said he was trying to watch the Grammy announcements on TV, but missed it because he was on the wrong channel, Sarah.
Oh, no.
He said he had to look it up online like so many of us did. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, what about Best Country Solo Performance?
Okay, so the nominees in this category include Cam, Burning House, Traveler by Chris Stapleton, Little Toy Guns by Carrie Underwood, John Cougar, John Deere, John 316 by Keith Urban, and Chances Are Leanne Womack. Now that everyone is abuzz about Chris Stapleton, Cam and Leanne Womack are the underdogs here, because Leanne's album is like what Chris Stapleton's was, the one that fans and critics loved but did not receive airplay. And Cam is a newcomer whose song Burning House is actually one of my personal favorites and is a top 10 hit on the charts. And Cam, which I thought was funny, she responded in disbelief. She just posted on Facebook, wait, will you guys double check this? Am I actually nominated for a Grammy? So I'm personally rooting for Leanne or Chris Stapleton, but I would be equally ecstatic if Cam actually won.
Well, tell us about the Best Country Duo Group Performance category.
Okay, so the nominees are Stay a Little Longer by Brothers Osborne, If I Needed You, Joey and Rory, The Driver, Charles Kelly, Dierks Bentley and Eric Paisley, Girl Crush, Little Big Town, and Lonely Tonight, Blake Shelton and Ashley Monroe. The big surprise here was Joey and Rory, If I Needed You. It's a touching song about the arrival of their newborn last year. The entire year has been very emotional for these two, as they have been blogging and documenting Rory's bout with terminal cancer. Currently, they have decided to stop all treatment, and she is in hospice. So everyone connected to country music has been rallying around them and keeping them in prayer. So it was a precious surprise to them. Joey wrote on Facebook, "Woke my bride up this morning with a baby in my arms and the news that our version of If I Needed You was nominated for a Grammy. As her excitement and tears flowed into mine, she said, 'How can that be?' The song received no airplay, no press, no critical acclaim, and the only music video we made for it was to celebrate the day our little Indiana was born. God is so good. Thank you, thank you, Thank you. And even though If I Needed You is a beautiful, touching song, many predict that the commercial success of Little Big Town's Girl Crush will result in their winning the actual award. And Little Big Town, by the way, is up for 4 nominations overall, along with Chris Stapleton. And they posted that they were thrilled to represent country music at the Grammys, especially in the all-genre category Song of the Year for Girl Crush.
You can hear the music of these country Grammy nominees and more on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki Strong on Facebook and Twitter at I Am Nikki Strong, or through VOA Music on Facebook and at VOA _ Music on Twitter. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got slowing down. I got it real bad. Want everything she has. That smile and that midnight laugh she's giving you now.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. That's voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking at the Saban Forum in Washington, Secretary of State John Kerry said the focus of U.S. policy in the Middle East is to help ensure that the builders and the healers throughout the region have the chance that they need to accomplish their tasks. Among key issues, Mr. Kerry pointed to progress being made toward a political solution to the Syrian war, which, if successful, would make possible a stronger and more unified assault on Daesh and other violent extremists. He also highlighted the critical need for Israeli and Palestinian leaders to break the current impasse and focus on working through the difficulties hindering the only viable option for peace between the Israeli and Palestinian peoples, a two-state solution that can afford security and prosperity for both. The United States, said Mr. Kerry, will be with them every step of the way to support them in that effort. Additionally, for the builders in the region to have the opportunity to succeed, it is imperative, Secretary Kerry said, that they be shielded as much as possible from the sources of imminent and potential danger. That is why the nuclear deal agreed to by the European Union, the P5+1 countries, and Iran is so important. 2 years ago, when formal negotiations with Iran began, Iran had 19,000 centrifuges. It had a stockpile of enriched uranium, and it was building a heavy water reactor able to produce enough weapons-grade plutonium for a bomb. If it chose to, Secretary Kerry said, Iran could obtain all of the fissile material needed for a nuclear weapon in as little as 2 months.
Under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, every single one of Iran's pathways to a bomb is blocked. Its uranium pathway, its plutonium pathway, its covert pathway. And because of the unprecedented monitoring and verification requirements that we negotiated, which are an integral part of this plan, we now have 25 years of day-to-day complete visibility on every ounce of uranium that is mined. We track it.
Secretary Kerry said the nuclear deal with Iran was considered on its own terms, not as part of speculation that Iran would make a shift in its destructive behavior in other areas. It was the right thing to do, he said, because any effort to roll back Iran's behavior is a lot easier if they don't have a nuclear weapon.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.